Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Policy and Transit and Oversight Committee Division of the Minnesota House of Representatives. I'm Frank Hornstein, Chair. It's great to see everybody again after our week hiatus last week. I did want to, before we do the minutes, which is our first agenda item, remind folks, and thank you, Representative Holberg, for turning off your cell phone. I've been told by our staff, which I'm just demonstrating here. There it goes. Please adhere to this rule. Apparently it interferes with the our vehicle's communication devices. No. I think that might be true when the pilots say that. But apparently it does interfere with our recording equipment here. And so as well as being considerate of your neighbors and the public, please turn off those wireless devices, at least here for that hour and a half. Nothing too important will happen that you need that for this hour and a half, I think. So, with that, I will... we do have minutes in your packets if people want to take a few seconds to review those. So we just had, of course, our introduction, so there wasn't a lot of controversy at our last meeting. Is there a motion to... thank you very much. Representative Davids moves the minutes from Wednesday, January 7th. Is there any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion carries. Thank you, Representative Davids. Our agenda item, our only agenda item for today is an important one, and that's an overview of MnDOT from a policy perspective. Those of you who are on the Transportation Finance Committee, the full committee, will hear a separate overview related to MnDOT's finances. That, we'll be touching on that today, but there's a lot of policy issues that we ought to be familiar with on this committee related to our largest transportation agency in the state. And so we have our new deputy, Commissioner Connie Sahibjim, who will give a presentation. We'll have questions and answers, and in addition for the committee to become familiar again with not only the decision making and the flow charts and the responsibilities of MnDOT, I would encourage us in our committee to start thinking a little about the economic stimulus package. This is going to be potentially hundreds of millions of dollars coming into the state's transportation system for infrastructure, roads and bridges. The president-elect actually, not president-elect, the president said yesterday, maybe one of the first inaugural addresses where roads and bridges were mentioned specifically. And so he did make reference to that stimulus package, and we need as a committee to be very aware of the ways in which that money will flow, MnDOT's process for selecting projects, et cetera. So I would really invite members who have questions or concerns or ideas or suggestions about that to also talk with Mr. Sahibjim about that as well. Finally, you know, Mr. Sahibjim is background is as an engineer. He's worked at the department for over 20 years, 25 years, is that correct? No?
Just under 20.
20, okay. I'm giving him extra credit. And I think as part of a new team over at MnDOT, along with Commissioner Sorrell, who myself and Senator Murphy and others of you who have had a chance to engage with over the last few months, we feel very, very confident in his leadership and in the new team. Their accessibility has been tremendous. Their willingness to discuss ideas and a dialogue has been exemplary, and I'm just very pleased that you're here, Mr. Sahibjim, and we look forward to continuing, I think, what started out as a new and forward-looking relationship with the legislature and MnDOT. So I just wanted to thank you for all of your help over these last few months and look forward to our continued work together. So with that, I'd like to present Mr. Connie Sahibjim to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, I'm Connie Sahibjim, Deputy Commissioner with MnDOT. Deputy Commissioner and Chief Engineer, as you said, with MnDOT. I do have with me Mr. Tim Henkel, who later on, when we get into some discussions about the state plan that we're working on right now, our long-range plan, and other multimodal issues that you may be interested in, and he can help me address those issues. I will go through this presentation. It's some of you may have seen some of this if you watched it. The Senate at the hearing of the commissioner, confirmation of the commissioner, I presented something similar to this. And I know you have some new members, so there might be some new information in here. So with that, I'll try to go through this fairly quick, and then we can have some time for discussion. I wanted to touch on some and you have this information both in packets and then also on the PowerPoint, of course. I wanted to show our org chart. It mostly looks the same as what it was before. However, we have made some changes that we felt were necessary. Of course, you notice very deliberately at the top of the list we have the citizens of Minnesota and governor and the legislature, because that's where our direction comes from. Other areas I'd like to touch on, the one position on to the left of the commissioner is a new position called the Transportation Ombudsman, and that position basically it was a current employee, it was with the department, Deb Ledvina, and that it just provides additional access to the citizens and all our partners in the spirit of being transparent and building public trust. For people to communicate with us, and that's we call that the conscience of the department. So that's going on, and she's been really busy actually recently with a lot of stuff. So and then moving over to the right, that box where you see there's five positions there. Some of the new folks in there are. A government affairs position, you folks are familiar with Betsy Parker. That position now is held by Scott Peterson. Betsy Parker is now our, she's our chief counsel. And this position is not to compete with the Attorney General's office. As you know, by law, the Attorney General's will continue to represent us in any types of litigations and issues. But we feel with the department this big and all the issues and policy issues that we talk about and things that we want to do, such as innovative financing and other things, there's always a need for internal counsel, and Betsy Parker will help us in that. The other position is a chief financial officer. We've always had a position like that, but it was down with some other duties. Mr. Kevin Gray has that, as you, some of you folks might know him. He has some other duties, but we wanted to elevate that position to clearly, again, show the accountability and better communication of our finances and our program. That's where the responsibility sits. Another to the left, if you look, there's six silos in the bottom there. On the left side, that's the new division. That's again folks that we've had within the department that we've reorganized, that moved over to that column on the left, and that is the Policy, Safety, and Strategic Initiative division, and that's led by Mr. Bernie Arsenal, who you may know. He's been a lead in our he was our traffic engineer. He's a leader in our safety initiatives. Within that division, there's an office called External Partnering, and that's exactly what it is, to further build relationship with the external folks, with the industry, and also national folks. The two offices that are more technical, one is the Traffic and Safety Office, and that again shows the importance that we feel towards safety. And also the Material Road Research Board is a great element of research and innovation in there. That's why we have that within that area. Another one in the middle of the page is called Project Scope and Cost Management, and that is a office made up of two people basically. But we've done a lot of work actually with the leadership of Mr. Henkel to my left. We've had, as you know, in the past with the talking about public trust and credibility and project scopes and the deferrals, you know, with the higher costs and inflation and scope creep, you know, project costs got out of hand and we ended up having to defer projects. And so this will allow us to better estimate the cost of the projects much earlier and do a better job in programming our projects. with that, let's go to the next. I like this one. It's kind of a reminder that this department used to be the highway department back before 1976. At that point, the legislature created the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And just like the language says, this is a multimodal a transportation department that we have. The next slide shows our districts. And basically, the MnDOT is divided into eight districts. And that is based the field offices, and we are a decentralized organization. Each district has a district engineer, and each district has their own challenges. They're all different, and with their challenges with the weather. At any point in time, at any year, you may have really bad weather up in District 2, which will beat up on the pavements for a whole season, and the southern part might be just fine, or vice versa. Up in District 1 and District 3, you have a lot of tourism, so there's challenges there, more of some mobility issues within some areas there. Then, of course, you have farmlands and over on the west side of the state, District 2, 4, 8, issues with freight and trucks and farm equipment and issues that they have with that. So each, and of course the Metro District is a little different obviously than the other ones. But that is, the districts are different, however they work together with a common goal. The next slide is the size of our transportation system. The trunk highway is around 12,000 miles, and of that, a little less than 4,000 miles is in the metro area. This is the state system that I'm talking about. And around 57 billion vehicle miles traveled. So one-third of the system is in the metro area, and when you look at the bridges, over 20 feet, is the numbers are correlate the same, 3,600 bridges statewide and 1,200 in the metro area and 2,400 in greater Minnesota. I point out 20 feet because that's what the federal that's how you qualify for federal dollars. We do have bridges under 20 feet also that we use state dollars to fund. We have of course, the water, rail, and freight division under Mr. Hinkle. And you can see some numbers, 211 million tons shipped in 2007, and then some numbers, 80 million tons shipped to water. And our role there is to manage the activities of these freight movements and enforce safety regulations and permitting with oversized trucks and so on. Then the transit area, within MnDOT, we only are responsible for the greater Minnesota transit, 73 greater Minnesota counties that we work with. The budget for that office is around $60 million. And of that, $19 million comes from general fund, around I think 13, 14 million out of the from the MVEST motor vehicle sales tax, and then the rest comes from federal dollars. So we help them design and implement the services and provide them the funds statewide. On the aviation office, 136 public airports. We administer the state and federal dollars for airports. We enforce statutes and rules, and of course we work with their planning and safety efforts.
Mr. Shujum?
Yes.
I probably should have made this announcement at the beginning. I tend to prefer when members have questions as you go along to ask them. Sometimes people save them up and we kind of lose the flow of things. We lose the moment. And so I wanted to let folks know that if you have questions, let me know and we can get those answered as you move along. And what I appreciate about your presentation is, you know, a lot of good information, but not really overwhelming. So I think that we're going to get through this relatively quickly. So that's why I think that, you know, as the members have questions, we can have a dialogue, a back and forth. So I think Representative Houseman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since you're, I think your transportation policy and transit, is that the name
correct.
Of your? Which
and of.
and because maybe the question was better answered in finance, but do we have a subsidy per passenger for Greater Minnesota Transit? And whether it varies across regions?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the subsidy per passenger?
Per passenger.
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, for the record, my name is Tim Hinkle. I'm the Director of Modal Planning and Program Management Division in MnDOT. The short answer to the question is there are certainly collection efforts that go on in rural Minnesota as they do in the metropolitan area. This office of MnDOT, Office of Transit, which I oversee, is responsible, however, for only the grant and aid part of the programs that support those operations in Greater Minnesota. So there is a subsidy that has to come from those operations through collection systems, but also the grant and aids that we provide to those systems for overall funding.
Representative Houseman, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess I didn't quite understand the answer. I mean, maybe it operates so differently that it's not possible to tell, you know, number of passengers and amount of subsidy. And
well,
I know we can. I know we do that for other bus service. Yes. Maybe it's not possible for Greater Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have those figures in front of me, but I'd certainly be willing to go back and see if we can gather that information and get that information back to Representative
Thanks, Mr. Hankel, because I think the I understand Representative Houseman's question and concern, because we've been looking at the opt-outs, for example, in the metropolitan area and, you know, the subsidies going there. And so I think it would be useful as we, you know, kind of examine transit budgets in particular that we can get some of that information. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think Ms. Allen in the past has been able, and they segregate it like the dial-a-rides versus, I mean, the transit costs for dial-a-ride versus Duluth and Rochester and St. Cloud. So I've seen figures that they put out, but it's segmented by the type of transit provided.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a better question for Mr. Hinkle. I thought that Representative Houseman was going to ask it, so I'll ask it instead, about the viability and maybe the efficacy of having a statewide transit plan developed. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, first, we are in the process of developing a state rail plan,
right,
as well as in the process of updating the statewide transit plan.
Okay.
Both of those plans will be completed this calendar year, and so each of those will provide us a better sense of the needs as well as the priorities on the passenger rail side, as well as what we typically look at in terms of bus service and transit service across the state of Minnesota outside of the Twin Cities metropolitan area.
Thank you. Well, we've opened the floodgates a little bit here. Representative Leader.
Yes.
Sorry. You're on deck here.
All right.
Representative Leader and then Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just getting back to the subsidy, there's no direct subsidy as far as operation or passenger subsidy. The only subsidy they get on transit is a pass-through from federal money to buy capital equipment, but the fare box is not subsidized, not in rural transit.
Paid for 100% by fares?
Representative, when we have Representative Erdahl, then we can get Representative Houseman's follow up.
Representative Houseman's follow up.
Okay.
You mean it's Representative Leader, 100% covered by FAERS operations?
The local unit, Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, FAERBox is also supplemented by local units, the government. They provide some money. I believe that's correct. There's no operation, no operating FAERS subsidized by state money.
I think Representative Zewers is going to have a look at this, but in the meantime, I'd like to take Representative Erdahl's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Henkel, you referenced a report that MnDOT is working on the, on statewide transit that will be finished this calendar year. Are you taking suggestions from the legislature on items that we think should be considered?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, yes. That plan is nearing its draft plan stage. It will be open for public comment and legislative comment about a month from now. That's the formal process of getting input. We have also, throughout the plan development activities, had open opportunities for comment. But right now is where we're getting to that draft plan stage, and we will have opportunities. And we would certainly welcome the opportunity at your request to provide information here in this setting on that plan and where it's going.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I will have some suggestions for you regarding a particular area of the state that I live in.
Well, and just thank you, Representative Roland. To follow up, I would like to have a conversation about the rail plan in this committee, maybe within the next month. And, I don't know if there's a way that one issue I've heard, Mr. Henkel, is there any way to speed up that process? Because my understanding is we can't begin to start getting federal funds for anything until that plan is completed. And, I think there's some concern with the stimulus package coming through. Is there any way to accelerate that process? I know that there was a plan even done in the late 90s, Representative Wagenius told me, and maybe there's some elements of that plan that are still relevant. I think certainly for commuter rail and high-speed rail it would be. So any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, we recognize the need to complete this plan. We have, however, looked at the law and what we expect in terms of eligibility requirements for federal funds, and it's our current expectation that we could, if necessary, compete today. We know, however, that this rail plan, when completed, will identify priorities at a corridor level. We recognize how important that is. So we're moving rapidly, given that recognition, to get this plan done. And our current expectation is that by this summer, we will be at a stage where we'll probably be at a draft plan stage where we can begin to answer some of those questions in recognition of that need.
Well, thank you. And I think, again, members, think about your questions on this, because I think this is a very, very important thing. And I think it's very important from a freight and passenger perspective. I think this is where we're going in terms of the future of infrastructure in many ways, much more seriously. And it's one of my priorities, and I know many, when we did our introductions around the table a couple of weeks ago, it was a priority for many here. And so we want to give people a real flavor for what this involves, what this entails. And so expect that we'll have a portion, at least, of a future committee meeting dedicated to the rail plan. Any questions for now? We can let the Deputy Commissioner continue then.
Thank you.
I think you were on bicycle and pedestrian.
Yes, I was. Well, I'm glad you stopped me for questions. That was good.
Thank you.
The last piece was, as you mentioned, bicycle and pedestrian ways. That's always especially in the metropolitan urban areas, it's an element of our transportation system, and especially when you have facilities along and on the trunk highway system. We do have design standards and provide those systems as needed. And now the next page is I'd like to talk about our core functions. The first one, the system operations and maintenance, and the first two are, I call them the bread and butter. Those are the where you see all the action on the outside, where our maintenance guys, our operations people, all our snow and ice activities, and all the partnerships we do with the cities and counties with that regard, our infrastructure maintenance, bridge inspections, road maintenance in the summertime. That's all part of this area. The freeway operations you see in the metropolitan areas is part of this, and it's a challenging effort to estimate, you know, the staffing and our guys, especially in the guys and gals in the winter time. You don't, like, if you recall, like in the month of December, they got hit. Seemed like every other day. One day it was cold, the next day it was snow, and so on. So never. Sometimes they don't get a break. They work 12-hour shifts. They go home, sleep for 12 hours, come back again, and just doesn't end for many hours. So it is a challenging work, and those guys are very, very proud of what they do, and they don't go home until the last snowflake is off the system. And so they're very proud of what they do, and we're proud of their efforts too. The next bullet is...
Just 1 minute. Mr. Deputy Commissioner, yeah. We have a question from Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering, in past discussions on transportation, the figure comes out that we are $1.7 billion behind, you know, each year in operations and maintenance. Is there a figure that you can identify that we are behind, or are we not?
Mr. Siebdom.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as far as maintenance goes, we, yes, we have been lacking in the past few years with staffing levels, and we are, with the recent funding that the department received, we are addressing those issues, and because we do have performance targets that we like to meet in clearing our roads. So many, and I don't remember all the detail numbers, so many hours to clear pavement and after snowfall. And so we do have performance targets that we like to meet and we to stay on track. And again, this varies so much statewide that it's hard to put a handle on. Now, as far as the numbers, I'm not sure what numbers you're talking about the deficit in maintenance. That's basically the needs that we have in equipment and keeping up our fleet. They get old, and we have to replace them after so many years. And we have a process in place that we use to do that. And we always keep, as we go out to plow snow in any event, for example, in the metro area, we have maybe 250 trucks in metro, and we might send out only 220 out at the most and keep the rest of them as reserve, because some break down always, so you always have reserves to help with that.
Follow-up, Representative Erdahl.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, based on current funding, do you have an amount of money that you think would be needed to bring you up to the level that you should be?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we've made great progress in doing that. It's really difficult with the snow and ice. If you look at our targets, we have been meeting them, but in any event, 1 or 2 months of bad weather, that dial can move, and so it's so dependent on the weather and the conditions that we have. So I think we're making great progress in there, and our plan has been, again, with this recent funding, additional funding that was provided, we're able to address those areas. For example, we do use our program delivery. We have used in the past our program delivery people to help with the snow and ice and maintenance. And our goal is to continue to have volunteers. We have people who like to volunteer to do that and to help out. But we would like to have a full-time staff in maintenance. In snow and ice, and in the metro area, actually, it's the summer work that is the key in number of people that you need in maintenance work, guardrail repair, potholes, and so on. All the work that you need to do in the summertime. If you've been driving our system the past few days, it's pretty rough in some areas, and I think when it thaws out, it'll probably smooth out a little bit, but I see our guys out there. I was just driving down from Brainerd today. They're out there patching and doing emergency patching out there and to keep up with it until the weather warms up so they can address it better.
Representative Leader and then Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sahijam. The counties and local units now and cities can participate in joint purchasing. And are you anticipating any change between the agreement now that we have with the governor of Wisconsin and Minnesota of buying different equipment? The reason I'm thinking about it, salt is a big item. We've got three companies that are headquartered in Minnesota. And if one of those companies gets a joint bid for both, do you think you're going to save any money? Because we're in a... Actually, practically every unit of government we have, the counties or cities, buy from one of these three suppliers. In other words, we're going to knock two of them out if we do that. That would appear to me. Now, I wonder if the legislature shouldn't have a little oversight if your department's considering buying specific items. You know, they can do that on joint purchases with trucks and everything else right now. So what are you really thinking about if you have that order to joint purchase with Wisconsin, or haven't you thought about that yet?
Mr. Sahijam.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, that's a good question. We have just started, as you may have seen the order, both states will have a report back to their governors by the end of February, and we just contacted our counterparts there. We have a meeting set up with it's not just salt, it's any kind of issue for us with regard to transportation, and we've been brainstorming, and a few people from our department and also our counterparts from Wisconsin will meet somewhere halfway, and pretty soon, I'm thinking maybe next week, to look at these opportunities, and that may be one. But as you start talking about each opportunity, there may be some problems with it too. So that would be our job to make sure that we address those issues. And so to ask your question, we haven't looked into that specific issue in detail to see if it does have a negative impact. But that's our job to do that. So we will have something soon by the end of the month of opportunities with Wisconsin. So,
Chairman Leader, a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sahijam, I'd just like to suggest that when you look at that, they look at the total economic impact before you just look at the unit price. Because I think if this happens, I think we'll have a hearing on it in committee so we could certainly take a look at the total economic impact. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have Representative Hortman and Representative Swales, but before we get to them, we do have some answer. I asked our fiscal analyst Ms. Zewers to she was willing to help us out with the previous question. I think Representative Houseman and a few others had talked about related to that, I believe, the transit question. So, Ms. Zewers, do you want to, before we kind of totally forget about that, I wanted to call on you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, Greater Minnesota Transit receives a general fund appropriation as well as MVES revenue and a small amount of trunk highway fund dollars each year, as well as a portion of the sales tax on motor vehicle leases. In fiscal 2010, the total is about $34.7 million dollars from those three sources, and then that goes up through 2012 with the phase-in of MBEST. So in fiscal 2011, it goes up to 38.4, and in fiscal 2012, $39.9 million.
That's very helpful. Chairman Leader,
Mr.
comment
Chair,
on that.
Yes. Mrs. Ewers, basically that's not operating subsidies. That normally, I'm just, maybe it's changed, but I used to run a transit operation in the colony, and that basically went for PEPFL, not operating a subsidy. Is that correct?
Ms. Ewers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, I looked in the budget books to clarify that, and it says that the grants are for both operating and capital projects.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ewers, for helping out with that. We have Representative Hortman and Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the issue that Representative Erdahl raised about the $1.2 billion to $1.7 billion gap, that was a number that came from the Transportation Alliance, and it was based on a total system deficit, and that was before we passed the transportation bill. So I don't know if I suspect they've recrunched the numbers. I don't know what the new number is, but roughly the bill that we passed provided about $600 million a year. So hopefully it's $600 million to $1.1 billion short. And that was operations and maintenance plus construction. So that's where those numbers came from that we used a lot in the last 2 years. But the question I have for the Deputy Commissioner is about the condition of the roads during this last really bad weather. We had some freezing rain in late December, and then we had very cold days. And I know the roads have been we're in pretty rough shape about 2 weeks ago, and I don't know about you guys, but I've been hearing from constituents, is MnDOT trying some new chemical? Is something different? Do you have any words to say about why the conditions were so rough on the roads?
Mr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, that's a good question, and I think the main reason, it's not because of the chemicals. It has to do with the freeze-thaw. The worst temperature, if the whole state would go into a deep freeze 30 below and stays there for 5 months and then come back, everything would be fine. I think it would be fine. Much better than well, road-wise,
let me get rid of some of the riffraff around here.
Okay. But the problem is that it goes above, it freezes, and then the next day it goes above freezing and freeze-thaw, and that's what the problem is. And when it freezes, it expands and breaks the aggregate and then the pavement. Similar to wood. If you take a piece of wood and put it in the water, if you leave it in the water forever, it won't rot. If you keep it out and leave it dry forever, it won't rot. But you keep making it wet, dry, and it rots. Not that wood is the same as concrete, but it's the same concept, really. So that is the reason the weather, that's why I say the temperatures have a lot to do with it, with that. So we do have a challenging year this spring to fix that.
Follow up, Representative Hortman, but I just wanted to clarify something because this is very important, members, because we've heard so much in the media whenever there's a problem, the dreaded black ice, and they'll say, well, this is really the MnDOT chemicals are not effective at a certain temperature. Oh my gosh, whose cell phone's ringing? No, I thought I turned mine off. I demonstrated it, and I didn't. Anyway, I think it's broken. It doesn't turn off. Now there it goes. So he's turning red. Mr. Siegfried, we hear about this over and over again. At a certain temperature, the chemicals are not effective. You're saying they are, it's just that when we have these Alberta clippers that come through and then it gets warm and it gets cold, that's the issue. Is there anything you can do that would, or a chemical or any kind of treatment that would address that problem?
Mr. Chair, I think there's two different issues here. The one issue is the clearing of the surface, and the other issue is the structure. And what you're talking about is the asphalt coming apart because of the freeze-thaw. And I think the black ice issue and the issue I've been hearing about from constituents is the clearing of the surface thing, which is where your chemicals and their different effectiveness at different temperatures comes in.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we've come a long ways going back to the olden days, and I didn't live in this country in the olden days, but I hear they used to shovel all the salt off the truck under the road, then they just dumped it out the next generation. And now we go through some real advanced methods, and for example, a pre-wet the salt. You know, if you dump dry salt onto a road, it'll splash and go all over the place. It won't do its thing. But if you pre-wet it, it'll stick to the pavement. And we go out before we anticipate with our weather systems. We anticipate when the storms come, and we go out apply chemicals to the ramps and bridges, not to the whole system, in critical areas, to keep that from freezing. So we do the best we can to prevent that. So the black ice, yeah, that's when it gets to the 20, I don't know the exact temperature, I'm not an expert at that, but 20, 30 below, then nothing works. And from your exhaust of your cars, especially in the metro area, cars sitting in traffic, that'll create frost under the pavement, and it creates patchy ice areas. So,
Representative Horvin, did you have that? Okay, thank you. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I just have a question related to research and development in regards to these kinds of techniques. My home state is Missouri, and I know that down there they use a beet juice formula to treat the roads. And I'm just curious, who does the research for you? How do you come up with these techniques? And is it an ongoing process, like within relationship with you, or who does this for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. That's a good question. And we have a central maintenance office that centrally works on fleet, and also there's a research office within the maintenance office, and it's practical research. It's not just running tests in the laboratory, and it's actually practical research where we do it on, we experiment on the roads, and if you notice on the left side of our org chart, we have the whole research office as part of that, and we do have partnerships with the university, and the other part is our whole, if you look at our research efforts in Minroad and now with the Terra, we learn a lot from other countries, from Scandinavian countries who we have a good relationship with. They learn from us, we learn from them, so we exchange a lot of information that way. To me, that's the best way of learning, improving your process.
So, that would be some economic development for the northwest part of the state, I think, if we do something like that. Okay. Thank you, members. We should maybe move on to the trends discussion and a few other things. So thank you again for the questions.
Okay. Talking about the trends, I think this is some it's an interesting graph. You see the growth in population starting in 1992 to 2007. There is a growth in population. Then you can compare that to the blue, the middle line, which is this employment growth, and then the line up on top. And I don't know if you have a color copy, but it's a red one that it stays the vehicle miles traveled, and that's a calculation that's done Federal Highway Administration. We give them automated travel recorder data or travel data, and then they run it through a system and calculate the numbers. It has been running flat over the past few years. Now, if you go to the next, here's the next slide. This is the Federal Highway Administration numbers. It correlates with our Minnesota numbers. It's staying pretty flat on from 2005 to 2007, but then you see a drop starting in 2008. And that drop obviously is for various reasons. It could be unemployment, people are not driving as much, people are not going to work. People are eliminating unnecessary trips, which is always good. And then the other part, the main part, I think, is the change in driving habits that the people have, and that's mostly because of the higher pricing in gasoline. And this was a trend, probably, as you all know, years ago in Europe. And gas in Europe has been, I was born there, and as long as I remember, it was always around $4 a gallon. And that's why you had a good transit system there. So the vehicle miles traveled going down, that has some negative consequences as far as dollars go, bringing in the consumption of gasoline goes down, therefore our revenues go down. But I would like to look at a silver lining in this, and maybe there's a trend in changing of driving habits, and maybe people are finding different ways of traveling and not so much with cars. This also gives a lot of emphasis to if there's going to be less gasoline purchased in the future, maybe there needs to be different ways of funding transportation. A lot of talk is going on nationally with that regard, as you may know, and we're starting a study, called mileage-based user fee study, and a lot of talk going on internationally with regard to congestion pricing, where you pay. For example, Netherlands, they're going to have a system established in 2010, I believe, where you, through satellite, you're going to start out with trucks, and then every vehicle will be monitored, where they drive, on which road system, and when they drive, and then they're charged accordingly. So you're paying for as a user fee. So that's what's going on, and a lot of other states are looking at that, like Oregon and other states. Any question with that?
Yes, Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this slide, there's an abbreviation ATR. What does that mean?
That's an automated traffic recorder.
Thank you.
Very quick question on that, not on the ATR, but have you been, I know this is relatively recently, but have you been able to correlate any savings in maintenance costs when you have a reduction in vehicle miles traveled?
Mr. Chair, no, not that I know of.
Okay. Thank you. I think we're already on the safety slide if we don't have any additional questions.
Would you like to skip to that?
Or wait, hang on.
I just have this one slide.
Yeah, share and vehicle.
Yeah,
okay,
gives sure. you a, this slide gives you a feel for the size of our system compared to the local system and the traffic that they carry. You see that the top one is a state trunk highway. It's 8% of the miles, but it carries almost 60% of the vehicle miles. The county state 8 system is about 22%, and that's about what it carries as far as mileage. And you can see the rest of it. For example, the township road system is about 41% of our miles. It's almost like a 1 square mile grid if you look at a map, and it carries about 2% of the system, and that 2% of the vehicle miles, and that's a lot of those are gravel roads if you've been out outstate. So and then we have city streets and other highways, so this kind of gives you a feel for our road system. There are no questions. The next slide is the slide that I'm really proud of with regard to our safety efforts. Those numbers that you see in that graph are fatalities. And I don't know if you see where the pink area starts. That's around 2003. That's when we had a shift in philosophy with regard to safety. We became one of the top 10 states that got involved nationally with this effort. We partnered with our local agencies here. That's one of the important parts that realizing that fatalities don't just happen on the main freeways. They happen, half of them happen in the local system. So we created a partnership with the locals, with the counties and cities, and then approached the whole safety issue very proactively and systematically, and have done a lot of fixes that you may have seen with regard to rumble strips and rumble stripes and wet reflective paint, where you can see the stripes better in the, at night in the dark and when it's wet in the rain, and median barriers, these metal, the cable median barriers. You've seen it. We have them driving down from Brainerd today. I noticed it's been hit quite a bit on the interstate, which to me, every one of those hits I see, I know it's a pain for our maintenance guys to go out there and fix it, but it probably saved a life. So that means a lot to us. Back in 2004, we set a goal to be down to 500, less than 500 fatalities by 2008. We achieved that goal in 2006. You see it's been going down since 2003. Starting in 2007, it went up from 494 to 510, and the reason for that is that includes 13 tragic fatalities on the 35W bridge and 6 fatalities on the southeast Minnesota floods. So roadway related, it's been going down, and we have a goal. We are at the lowest at 400, and this is 440, but that is actually 424. This past year, and our goal is to be below 400 by 2010.
Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner, I'm going to ask you for a couple of statistics. If you don't have them, perhaps you just get it to us later. But what percent of Minnesota drivers use seatbelts? And of those involved in fatalities, what percent were not wearing seatbelts?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't remember those numbers. I have seen them, but I don't remember, so I don't want to give you the wrong numbers, so we will provide that to you.
Representative Portman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that might be a public safety question, but when I look at this chart, I'm so impressed and so proud of Department of Public Safety and MnDOT. I don't think people hear as much about what you're doing in these efforts, so I'm glad that you talked about the rumble strips and the reflective paint and that issue. I just think this is something we should really call out when you guys are doing a great job, because we definitely ask you a zillion questions whenever we're concerned about something, so this is just very excellent.
I appreciate your comment, Representative Hartman. Representative Houseman.
But speaking of that, what's happening to the highway lights on 94?
Mr. Sahibjian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, the lights on 94...
Yeah, I would say probably a third of them are out between Minneapolis and St. Paul. So you're going along and it's light, and then suddenly you're in dark, and then you're...
I don't know. I will take this opportunity, and I'll follow up with our Metro District and get back to you right away. This is between the two downtowns?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sounds like some other members have noticed that too. So, Representative Houseman, do you know about how long this has been an issue or a problem?
It's relatively recent, and it's so dramatic, of course, in the winter, because you suddenly, it's the transition in the light, in the dark, in the light, in the dark. So it's more startling.
And thank you, Representative Houseman. And members, either in committee or even maybe preferably outside of committee, whenever we have someone from MnDOT, it's very good to ask these kind of questions specific to your local area, because sometimes we're the eyes and ears. They might not even know. And this sounds, Representative Houseman, like it's a fairly major potential issue. So all of you should feel free. Mr. Sahibjian, if a member has a specific question about a local safety issue in their district,
do you have advice about who they should talk to? And I really would hope that members can do that and get a quick response from MnDOT. What's the best way if, let's say there's some issue on Highway 12 that Representative Erdahl notices or is concerned about, who should he call in the department, or write or email?
Mr. Chair, I think the way I operate, I'd love to get all those questions myself and respond to them, but it can't. But I think the best way might be to work through Scott Peterson, our government liaison person, and he can provide you that information very quickly.
And I think for those of you in Greater Minnesota, you have your district offices, I think, that are set up for that purpose. But hear that, folks? This is really an important part of what we do. So, okay, any other questions before we get to the transportation plan? Okay.
Mr. Chair,
to you, Jim.
Yes, I do have just a few slides here to just talk about it in general, where we are with our statewide plan. And then we'll be done with the presentation, and we can discuss more, if you'd like, about the state transportation plan and, as you mentioned earlier, the economic stimulus plan. As it's stated here by law, it's required for us to provide a new plan every 6 years. The last plan that we've done was done in 2003, so the next update is due by 2009, and we are on track to do that. This plan is, as you'll see, is very multimodal, jurisdictional, and it follows our policies that we have. And the next slide shows our 10 main policy frameworks. And we, of course, travel safety, infrastructure, preservation, and maintenance, national, global connections, and I can touch on all these if you'd like. Statewide connections, metropolitan, Twin Cities mobility, Greater Minnesota mobility, and transportation, community development, energy and environment, and transparency and innovation. And these are, this is what we use as a framework to develop a plan. Here's basically everything starts with a vision.
Oh, Mr. Sieta, maybe before we get to that piece, I know Representative Champion had a question.
Just a quick question.
Sorry.
It is my understanding that there are supposed to be or should be DBE goals, and it is my understanding that it's your Department of Civil Rights that is slated best to make sure that there's monitoring and oversight. And when I look at your framework, I want to know what your thoughts and visions are around inclusion and what those goals are, both on the transportation side and on the transit side, and whether finally MnDOT is in line with their projected goals.
Mr. Steve.
Mr. Chair, the DBE issue, it does not show up in this policy framework, but it is in our everyday operations as far as projects go. As you know, we do have goals that we set that the goal that we have, and I think this year is around 15%, and we've had history of sometimes meeting it and sometimes not. And and we also have efforts going on. I don't know, Representative, if you're familiar with our, we're working with the minority communities in helping creating jobs for them with as part of the requirements in Safety Lou. I believe there is some dollars provided for that and we've had regular meetings weekly now with minority contractors, our own general contractors. We're meeting together to meet those goals, how to address those issues. And so there are some goals as to a percentage of the contract work will be subbed out to minority companies. And then there's also a goal as to providing and helping training, creating good jobs for people who are interested in working in transportation, and so they can get jobs with the contract.
May I follow up?
You have a follow-up. Yes, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Now, it's my understanding that you said that the goal is 15%. Now, that's my understanding. That's on the construction side or the transportation side. And then there's a separate goal for transit. And I'm not sure if I heard you correctly or not. Even though that you have those goals, can you tell me if you met those goals or not?
Mr. Sahibjan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're in the middle of the fiscal year, so we're going to have a lot of projects that will happen this summer, and we'll be working on, and our goal is to meet the goal and be part of that. So we have about $700 million worth of projects that will be building this fiscal year 09 that we're in. So we'll know at the end of the year what it is.
Thank you. And I think this is a really important conversation. You know, Representative Houseman included some language in the omnibus policy bill, the first one we did last year, I think, on this topic. And so I think it's I think there's some additional, is that correct, Representative Houseman, some additional reporting requirements. So we'll look forward to continuing that conversation. Okay. Programming process.
Yeah, on the same subject, on the, if you look at the org chart on the left side at organizations I mentioned, the civil rights is there, and it's with the external partnering, and that is basically gives you that emphasizes the importance that we have in the working with those folks, and that's what we're doing.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
Representative Champion.
I definitely believe that it's important, and I trust that you all believe it's important as well. And so it would be great if we could get the numbers up from last year to see where you guys were as far as your goals were concerned, and also the numbers where you are currently, so we can see if you're on pace to really reach those goals, both on the transportation side and the transit side.
Good.
Okay.
Okay, our planning and program process.
And this is basically a chart that shows you how things start as a vision, and then we develop the first box on the left-hand side. That's basically where our policy framework is and our performance goal. Based on our performance goals, we are a very performance-driven, and Mr. Hinkle is a champion of that, making sure everything is done. We have performance measures for everything, so that's how we design our plan. And then we go through and develop a long-range plan. That's 11 years out to 20 years out. And then our HIP, we call it, Highway Investment Plan. That's a 5 to 10-year program. And it emphasizes basically the four major spending areas in safety, mobility, preservation, and community development. And of course, the last one is the STIP, which is our four-year plan, and it's a program where you have federal dollars attached to every project. That plan is approved actually by the Federal Highway Administration. And here's the efforts that we have had so far. We do have extensive efforts with the public. We work in close relationship with the Metropolitan Council and other planning organizations. We were out in spring of 2007 sharing with the public, and everybody is in open houses. Everybody is invited, including yourselves. Then we stopped work for a while because of the bridge collapse in 2007 and started up our efforts in summer of 2008. And we went back to the public all around the state. The new commissioner did it himself. Along with Tim, they traveled everywhere and shared our trends and issues and revenue outlooks. And based on that, we took all that input in from all the districts, and now we're going out again. We have a draft plan, I believe, on the website. We have a plan on the website, and we're going out in February. And I personally look forward to going to some of those trips as much as I can visit with our, and the next sheet basically shows you the dates of where we're going to be, and I welcome you to join us when you can for that.
Before, maybe Mr. Sheehan, before we get to the challenges and opportunities, I know Representative Morrow has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. I think, Mr. Hankel, you may have just said it's on your website. Could you send maybe the committee assistant or the legislative assistant or the chair the link to that so we can see the plan? I know at least my district, they've invited us to the ATP meetings. It'd be nice to be able to see the plans before, and then other members may want to see those as well.
Mr. Chairman, we will do that.
Thank you, and we'll be sure to get that out to everybody. Good point, Representative Morrow. Follow-up?
A second question. You mentioned the federal economic stimulus package that may be coming forward, and talking about the statewide plan, are there potential ways in which the federal monies might affect what the state plan looks like? In other words, might you find after the public meetings that you have to adjust the statewide plan given legislation and funding that might come from the federal level?
This is Evening.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's a good question. Tim can probably answer it much better, but I do think that there could be situations where you have to, where we might find opportunities where you can leverage federal dollars to advance a project that's in the current plan, might be 5 years out, that's deliverable, that you could move up. So it could affect that somewhat. How did I do? Good?
Okay. And then to this point, maybe we can, in addition to Representative Morrow and myself, if there's any members that have issues or questions about the stimulus, maybe this is a time to talk about it, because it does relate so much to your SIP process. I know that Congressman Obey has introduced a bill last week, and I don't know, it would be helpful to know your thoughts about any process that will be set up for the stimulus in terms of the amount of money that you would anticipate coming to the state for the... I know there's a separate set of conversations going on about transit, but for roads and bridges, you know, what do you anticipate? What are your conversations? What have they been? What process is in place to receive the money? From what you know, is it going to be in the form of block grants versus... I know there's no earmarks, but if you could just maybe give us a short little overview about what you know to date about the stimulus plan and, you know, what kind of public discussion could take place about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to maybe take this up. We do have a handout, and I think it was sent to everybody. Maybe we can distribute that, and I'll follow that and go through it and just touch on some highlights of the questions that you have. First of all, we truly believe as a state, we have a great reputation nationally, especially with the 35W bridge and other projects. We're one of a few that can deliver, and we have that reputation that we can do that. We truly believe that it needs this economic stimulus plan, does need to have the reason 35W bridge was successful was because it had obviously orders from the top that it will happen, and we had emergency relief provisions that we abided by that helped expedite the processes and not bypassing any requirements. So that's what made that successful. And the packet that you're getting, it's a three or four page document that we put together, and I'd like to touch on a few things in this. First of all, the middle of the first page, it talks about program development criteria. That's basically our principal guidelines of how we're going to pick, select a healthy program. Number one is project readiness. As you know, there's a big emphasis on that. In the legislation that you've referred to, it talks about redistribution of dollars. That means that for those who don't deliver on time, they will lose their money to those who can deliver. So we want to make sure we use projects that are ready. The second bullet talks about consistency with performance-based plan. That's basically meaning that you want to pick good projects that improves your performance levels. The third one is the statewide coverage. This needs to be a statewide plan. It does as much as possible. We're not going to stick specifically to certain percentages, 9.9% to so-and-so district, because that'll be difficult to do, but we're going to stick as close as much as we can, as close to the statewide percentages, metro versus outstate, and then within each district. And then the work type balance, that's very important for the industry and for us to get a good mix of projects. By that I mean the tumulus, concrete, bridge, grading, landscape work, and all of these different work types. To give you an example, I heard the state of Oklahoma, I'm sure they're not watching this program, but I heard all they're going to do is do asphalt mill and overlay everywhere, and they can get the projects out. But all that's going to do is drive up the price and not be very productive way of spending those dollars and creating jobs. Some of the program delivery challenges, and this kind of ties into your question about where we're, who all we're working with and talking to, and I'll touch on that. The type of projects that we're going to pick, obviously, are going to have environmental documents completed or close to being complete, because that takes some time, and we don't want to bypass that that issue. The right-of-way, planning right-of-way, of course, when you have... you cannot do projects where you you have too many right-of-way issues and land purchasing of land and land acquisitions. That takes time, and so we will have projects that will have that through our design-build process. We can do that where you can purchase right-of-way during construction. So there will be some, but we need to minimize that, especially when you have federal dollars. You need to get approval from the Federal Highway Administration whenever you go into a work on a project. And you want to start before the agreement has been made with the landowner. That's called public interest finding. So you can't have too many of those. So we're cognizant of that. Letting schedule. Our goal is for this to be, I know they're talking about 90 days, 120 days, 180 days. So everybody locks that in their mind and says, okay, I have 4 months to do it. So everybody wants to let their projects 4 months after the enactment. Well, that's not a good way of doing it. You don't want to have all these projects left the same day. So we want to come out of the chute and have lettings literally 3 weeks. You know, might not be a major project, but smaller projects. You know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then a month, 2 months, 3 months. Try to distribute as much as we can. The use of consultants is very important, and we're going to utilize their help, because this basically doubles. If the numbers stay the way they are, it doubles our program, and that will be hard for us to deliver it all. On page 3, on top of the page, we talked about disadvantaged business enterprises. That's, we're working with those folks, and that's an important part of our plan, and that will be part of it. If you remember, the 35W bridge was built in 11 months, and in that within that project, we not only met the goal, and we exceeded the DBE goals. So that is doable. In the middle of page 3, we talk about coordination and communication, and that's the people who we have started to have discussions for this to be a successful plan, and that's working with our Federal Highway Administration. They will have an oversight role. They will have they were told to help out and make this happen for the states, but they also need to watch and make sure that it's that the projects that the states maintain their effort to keep in the current program in place also. MPOs, we will work with those folks in the Met County with the TAB. We have had discussions about this. Of course, with you folks, with the legislature, we may need, where you could help us is with regard to legislation that we may need, whether it's a temporary legislation to help enable this to happen. Not the current law would be a stumbling block, but we want to be able to deliver this, and that we may have to pass some minimal legislation for that. We have started to work with the cities and counties. Of course, they're wondering what they're, how they're going to, how much of it, the dollars will be theirs, and I'll touch on the OB bill a little bit that will address that. And of course, our permitting agencies, the DNR, PCA, and our associate general contractors, we have a meeting set up with them and then this week to talk about this, and we have already met with our consultants and of course the unions. Just to mention a few things about the bill that you talked, that's floating right now, and it probably will change before it's done, but some highlights in that bill. The one thing that it talks about is maintenance of effort, certifying. The governor of every state needs to certify their level, their maintenance of their effort, which means you cannot push an existing project out in order to deliver this. That loses its effects. You need to continue to do your plan that you have now, and this is on top of that. And Federal Highway will be monitoring this too. The whole accountability and reportability of this, reporting of this, creating jobs and making sure funds are spent on the right projects. There's some of that nationally that needs to be reported. And we're planning on doing that through our website by providing that information as often as we can. People can check and see what our level of efforts, number of jobs created, and its effect. And where we are with the plan. So we plan on going forward with this in a very transparent way. The other important part is talks a lot about redistribution of the dollars. It does, in a summary report, Transportation Weekly in Washington, I think every Friday they come out with a document. In there they talk about redistribution, and they actually mention states, some states as states that are slower in delivery, and they use New York as an example. I don't know if they have a history of being slow deliverers, but and then they mentioned some states that are fast deliverers. Unfortunately, they didn't mention us in there, but there are some of our states that that are just like us that I think they can deliver this. So there's opportunities to tap in, and that's part of our goal, to look at this as a just. First goal is to spend the dollars that you have and create the job and do what you need to do, which is the purpose of the bill. And also look further down the road for the second round. What type of projects would you be working on for that? So another thing I noticed in the bill, it talked about, I think when you run the numbers, the way the bill is written right now, it starts out 55% to the states, 45% comes. There's charts on this too. We can distribute to you sometime to the states at their discretion, and the other 45% gets divided up again amongst this, the state, and also goes to the MPOs. 62% of that 45% goes to the MPOs, and that's where this basically the regular federal program. To run 45% of the money through the regular federal program that's done now, where state and the locals have to compete for the dollars. And so we need to work with our locals on that. And they have language about the locals have 90 days to deliver, to encumber the dollars or obligate the dollars. If they don't, the funds go to the state for them to do.
Okay. Well, Mr. Siegem, thank you. On that New York, I lived there from 85 to 88. I think they were working on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway then, and I think they still are now. But members, we start and end on time here on the Transportation Policy, Transit, and Oversight Committee. So what I'd like to do is we have Representative Hausman, Representative Portman, and Representative Zellers, and I believe Representative Leader with questions. What I'd like to do is get through those questions and answers relatively quickly. And I see Representative Zellers is here and busy, but that's okay, Representative Zellers. I wanted everyone to make sure they stuck around to the end of the meeting because Representative Zellers wasn't here last time and we did do introductions. And so we're going to really want to hear from him as well at the end of the meeting.
and then we'll be done. Hopefully not too much after 2:30, but I want to get to these questions. And then one announcement before I forget is that this whole question of the stimulus is going to be an important part of what we do, both in this committee and Representative Leaders Committee. We do have House File 1 that deals with this. Representative Leader is having a hearing with Representative Oberstar on the 29th, I believe, and those of you who are on the Finance Committee will have a chance to really engage with Representative Oberstar both on the stimulus package and the surface transportation bill, which is going to be marked up the first half of this year. And I think I'd also, you know, want to extend an invitation to policy committee members that have an interest in having a conversation with Representative Oberstar to also attend that meeting as well. So we are really going to be working a lot on this.
When is that again?
That's on the 29th of January, I believe, and it's jointly with the Senate. So it's we usually have a meeting like that in Room 15. I don't know if so Room 15 at 12:30 on the 29th, Congressman Oberstar. So definitely note that. Let's try to get through these Q&As as quickly as possible. I just wanted to say that this is going to be an ongoing conversation about the stimulus, both in our committee and Representative Leaders. It's a very, very important part of what we're going to do this entire session on transportation. So in case you didn't have a question, you know, hold the thought, because we're going to be talking about this a lot. So with that, Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've thought sometimes that maybe we should have never changed the name of the department to from the Department of, you know, the Highway Department to Department of Transportation, because I mean, that's what I'm thinking we're going to spend this great opportunity on, that we'll just build a little more of what we're doing, but it will be really the same state that we've always been building. I mean, as I read all of these pages, unless you've got another plan somewhere, it looks as though MnDOT is advocating for a lot of highway money, or maybe that's all the federal government is talking about. And so here is this great opportunity for hopefully what would be transformational change. And are we leaving, for example, the Midwest Regional Rail System totally off the drawing board? And might the rest of the states be asking for that, and then we miss our one opportunity to move ahead with that project, which, as I understand it, has, you know, has enormous potential to build economy. And my fear is that we aren't asking the question on this. We're just grateful for dollars, and we don't say, does it build a healthy economy at the end of the day? We call it the economic recovery program. Is it only creating jobs? Are all jobs created equal, or are there some jobs, some construction jobs, that 5 years later would still be contributing to an economic recovery in this state?
Susie, Jim, I don't know if you want to comment on that very quickly, and then we'll move on to our... But I think Representative Houseman raises good questions, certainly ones that have been on my mind since at least Congressman Obie's bill has been introduced.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we will not spend these dollars on projects that we don't think are worthy. I think there is a lot of need as far as our pavements also, and we truly understand your point about transit and creating that balance. And we're going to do our best. Now, part of it is the law, or the bill is going to specify where you spend it. If it says, that's maybe something we need to talk about. If it says highway and bridges, does that mean highway and bridges, or does it mean something else? So those are the questions we have. We totally agree with you that we need to have a shift in thought and include transit as part of our mobility solutions. So I don't know if you want to add anything, but...
Thank you. Let's get to Representative Fortman's question quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we look at how to set forward the criteria for spending on these kind of projects, I hope that you internally and that we at the legislature look at that short-term and long-term jobs issue, and that we tend to favor projects that would not only create construction jobs in the short term, but also will create jobs in the communities where those projects are built. And that not all projects are created equal in terms of the economic impact that they have on an area. And so I hope that will be a consideration you talk about internally. I think it will certainly be a consideration we talk about here.
Thank you. We'll have Representative Leader, and then our we'll end with Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sagichem, actually, you indicate in here it's a $400,000 cap on consultants, and I see you had meetings with ACEC and AGC and AFSCME, and those meetings have been over now this last week. Is it pretty much an agreement that you can deliver these projects in time utilizing that cap and these people? Or are you going to have a project get a time deliver? Is that squared away?
Mr. Sagichem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, the $400,000 is currently, when we want to have a consultant work on our project, currently the cap is $100,000. If it's less than $100,000, you can just go pick a consultant that's on our pre-qualified list, that we have pre-qualified. For this purpose, we have worked with administration and bumped that up to $400,000. We have met with ACEC, all their membership, and of course with AFSCME also, and we have total confidence and cooperation of everybody that that selecting a consultant is not going to slow down this process, and we will. We've had discussions with AFSCME also that we will be able to deliver that on time. We have not met with the AGC folks yet. That'll be this Friday.
Thank you, and we'd like to certainly stay informed about those conversations. And thank you, Representative Leader. This is important. We have implications with the Taxpayer Accountability Act and other things related to this that we should be aware of. So, Representative Zellers, maybe before you ask your question, what we did the first meeting, everyone went around and introduced themselves, talked a little about where they represent and if there's any transportation issues in your area. You're going to join our Northwest Metro rock star, Representative Fortman, who worked on the Highway 169 issue. So now we really have two Northwest Metro folks on the Transportation Committee, which I'm very excited about. So, Representative Zellers, welcome, and we missed you last time, but I'm glad you're here this week.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think now that we've had the flu, strep throat, and bronchitis, I think the kids are through just about everything possible in the last 2 weeks they could have, so hopefully we won't have any more absences. I'm Kurt Zellers. I represent the District 32B area, which is the eastern side, or all the business and shopping areas in Maple Grove, and then the entire city of Osseo. My number one, and this actually, Mr. Chairman, the first time I've been on the Transportation Committee, and the fact that it's with you as chairman is actually something I look forward to.
Oh, thank you.
All deference to our other chairman in the room, but if I was going to have
yourself in trouble.
Yeah, you should have waited until after I asked my question. My one goal, I guess, in any of the transportation policy stuff is finishing 610. As a lowly staffer in the mid-1990s, I worked on the current 610, where it ends, as a staffer for Senator Grams, was Congressman Ramstead at that time. So this is not only a journey, it's kind of a life's mission in public policy. So finishing 610 is pretty much my single and only big issue on the Transportation Committee. And I actually thought Representative Horton would ask some of my questions on on the sheet for what we would be doing, but I'll be happy to add on.
Probably a good transition to I think what I know the question is coming maybe.
Just maybe. And Commissioner, thank you for stopping in. My question, and I looked through the list real quick, and it says great jobs, improved infrastructure, shovel ready, no right-of-way concerns, bipartisan support of the state and local leaders. I've got a deal for you. It's called Highway 610. It's a completion from 169 to 94. My questions, I guess, are on some of the criteria that we'll use locally. I understand that Washington will write whatever they want to in the bill, whatever they're going to try to dictate to us. I prefer highway infrastructure. I think that's where we need to put our money, because it's something we know people are using now, and we're at a lack of it. But I really get a little leery, and forgive me for being a little gun-shy when I hear that all the projects that are really, really, really ready to go are going to be the first ones, because we've been really, really, really ready to go for 20-plus years, and Highway 212 jumped us. Another number of other metro projects have leapfrogged over us, and I'm just curious as to what we need to do, because I can guarantee you my Maple Grove mayor and the Northwest Mayors Association is going to want to know exactly what questions or exactly what we need to do now to put ourselves at the front of the line where, I think honestly, bipartisanly and geographically, we think we should be.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zeller.
Mr. Hebron.
Can I just say to trust us? We'll make the right decision.
Well, Mr. Commissioner, if it wasn't for you sitting in a room of politicians, I'd say yes. But I don't think... and again, normally I would, but like I said, we've got kind of a, we've got a little shell shock up there because we've been ready for, you know, you can literally fly over my district and see the green space where the road is supposed to go. And, it's not been finished. And from an economic development standpoint, but we've got businesses now that are on the north and south side of 610 right up to the 169 area. And we've got folks, from across legislative districts that are waiting for that to finish. It's the but-for test, but-for the road, we build our building or we'd expand our jobs there.
Mr. Chair.
Last word with Mr. Steve Jim.
As far as since that project is in the metro area, in the metro we have we work through the TAB, Transportation Advisory Board. I used to be a member of that. And we are working on all our projects, and that project is obviously no secret is on the list of projects that have been on the governor's bonding bill in the past, and we feel it's a project that's not complete that needs to be completed. We have other projects like that too, so we're going to do our best to pick the right projects for this program.
So thank you, members. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Zeevden. This is one of the more engaging overview conversations I've witnessed in a while. Members, before I bang the gavel, let me just let you know that our meeting a week from today here at 1 o'clock, we're going to have a similar conversation with the Met Council. And if there's some bills ready to go, we might hear a couple of them next week. So I would, again, just reiterate what I said on January 7th, which is, try to get your bills in as early as possible so we can hear them. We only meet once a week. I don't want to have a big, crunch at the end here. So with that, our meeting is adjourned.